This is Alan Chainsaw Kessler, and you're listening to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
Welcome to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, bringing you tales, tips, discussions, and great interviews, led by two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Robbie and Bruce.
I don't know why, in my mind, April Fool's Day and playing poker always seem to go together. Maybe it's the bluffing portion involved with both events. At any rate, we have a great early April episode for your listening enjoyment. We reflect on a couple of April Fool's shows Eric and I did a few years back and get caught up on the latest from Robbie and myself and our home poker scene. Our special guest today is Ray Condler, a CPA that specializes in advising gamblers and poker players. We pick his brain for tips and strategies just a couple of weeks in advance of the dreaded tax deadline day. Chelsea, get us going. No fooling.
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
So, Bruce, you know, it feels like it's been ages. How you been running?
Well, you know, been running pretty good. No huge wins, but no huge losses. Been kind of a break-even Bruce, as they say. I did have an interesting hand, though, that I wanted to bring it up. We were in our mixed game, our dealer's choice. We play a lot of Big O. We always call it the get unstuck game. Mm-hmm. We play dealer's choice all night long, but the last hour and a half, anybody that chooses, it's kind of an unwritten rule. You get a lot of nasty looks if you don't choose Big O because everybody thinks that's the game that you're most likely to get unstuck with. So.
Right. Okay.
But, I had a great, you know, Big O was Omaha high and low, and I had a great starting hand. I had ace, ace, king, king, rag. And I think at least one of them were suited.
Okay.
So, I was in, pre-flop. It's pot limit. And I think there was a raise and call. So there was probably, $10-$15 in there pre-flop. The flop came out ace, queen, rag.
Okay.
But all three spades. And it's like, okay, great. That's the last thing you want in the world is top set and have the board be, you know, two to a straight and three to a flush. So, I just checked, went around, somebody bet, because I wasn't going to bet and get re-raised, so
right.
I just checked and bet, and I called. The river came out, another queen. I thought, oh, bingo, bango, bongo.
Right.
Suddenly I've got aces full. So I make a pretty big bet. Everybody folds except one other person, and they just call me. The river comes out a king, and I'm thinking, wow, this is, you know, not only do I have aces full, I have kings full. and so I make a pot size bet. The other person left in the pot, who's a real, she's our host and dealer. She's a real conservative player. She repots it. And I'm going, wow, I didn't think about it that long, which is my fault. I called her and she turned over pocket queens for
Of course
coins.
She did. Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, boy.
The point I'm trying to make with this is if you think about, and this is my Achilles heel, I'll be first to admit it. I think about what's in my hand and what's in the board and not what the other person has. And in any casino or a card room, if you're playing with a stranger, there is no way in the world you would ever fold that. But playing in a home game, playing with the same people you see from week to week, knowing her temperament, knowing what she's capable and what she's not capable of, if I'd have thought that through, I'd have thought, what could she possibly be calling with?
Right. Or raising with.
Raising with, exactly, because I've got aces full. It can't be aces full. I've got kings full. It can't be kings full. It could be, you know, she could have the queen and an ace or a queen and a king, so it would be queens full in that, but she wouldn't re-raise me with that. I should have just folded. In my mind, I think, how can you possibly fold that? But knowing what I know and being a home game,
right.
That to me, that's the example of a home game, playing with people you play with a lot and kind of knowing those things that you'd never know if you were sitting across the table from strangers.
True, so, but even
anyway,
so, I could just see, like, you have to show the table, hey, look what I'm folding. At least they're holding the second nuts. And then you know, she'd show the quads and everyone would be like, wow, oh, my God.
Was pretty fortunate this past week, too. Eric's parents, our famous co-host, they were in town. They live in Missouri, but they were in town just before Easter visiting with Eric. And a shout out to those guys. It's always good to play with them. Eric has always hosts a couple of games to have his dad and stepmom, who are just, they're the ones that got him, you know, originally in poker. In fact, they were on their way from Vegas to Missouri and just stopped in Salt Lake. So enjoyed playing with them too this last little while. Did get a tweet on from PJ on Twitter. PJ Ballin' Every Day. Interesting title he's got.
I love it.
We mentioned in the last episode April Fools, and in our introduction this time we've talked about April Fools, but that Eric and I did an April Fools story or April Fools episode that was quite humorous and got a lot of reaction, and people were almost like a, you know, that Mercury Theater invasion of Mars type of thing, where people thought it was real, really, and they were, you know, getting all upset and all agitated. And he says, "Hey, I've had some trouble finding it. Could you scope it out for me?" And I had trouble finding it too. I actually had to email Eric and say, "Can you point me in the right direction?" But I found it, and I'll make this in the show notes too. But if anybody's listening, interested in that April Fool's episode, it was episode number 130. And it was on April 1st, April Fool's Day of 2012. And then we did another one the next year. Wasn't quite as funny. Episode 182 on the 1st of April of 2013. So if anybody wants to go back and listen to those two episodes in commemoration of April Fool's, then certainly do that. So,
and I will just tell everyone, one easy place now, a new thing, great news for us here at Top Pair, to go back and listen to all those episodes. We are now on Podbean. Great stuff. We are really excited, and thanks so much to Jeff for getting us on there. Podbean is an app, for those of you who don't know. It's you can go ahead and find all your favorite podcasts, and now you just look for Top Pair. And we are there on Podbean, and all 259 now, episodes there. And every time a new episode is released, you'll get a little notification once you follow us. So be sure to follow us there. And, of course, we're on all the other social medias. You know, if you have some feedback for us, look for us on Twitter, at the Top Pair. And of course, on Facebook, look for the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. Love to hear from you.
And of course, an email feedback at toppair.net. And speaking of those ways to communicate with us, just as a reminder, again, in that same vein of April Fools, we're still into the next contest to give away a couple of sheets of uncut cards from J Design Cards, suitable for framing. Looks great in your poker room. We've given away one a month, I guess, now for the last 4 or 5 months. But Jason says, yeah, let's keep them going. So we announced it last time, just to remind you again, just send us either an email, a tweet, or mention it on our Facebook page, just April Fools, nothing fancy, nothing elaborate, just send us in April Fools as an entry,
and it is a real contest, you know, it's not just a fake contest, it's April Fools. It's a real contest.
So yeah, April Fools to feedback at toppair.net, and we'll enter you into that and let you know who the winners are in next episode.
Really cool. Good.
So what's new with you, Robbie?
Well, you know, just not too much at the poker table. Played a couple games since we last spoke here. Last episode was with our interview with Ronnie Barta. That was really fun. You know, my home games, two home games ago, I lost. You know, I was pretty much could have gone, you know, with the loss by losing the last hand, or could have gotten back to even. I did not win the last hand. But the last game I played, I won more than I lost in the previous session. So nothing too eventful. But when you ask how Robbie's running, something really cool happened. You know, a lot of you have heard over the last, you know, many episodes that we've got a commercial on here at Top Pair for the Poker Notes Live app. And that's an app that I helped co-create. I originally thought of it many years ago, way back in winter of 2011, as when I first had an idea to, before it was an app, it was just like, oh, let's mass produce some notepads. But, you know, I ended up, you know, going with the app. It seemed more apropos, to throw in a pun there. So way back when, I didn't actually do the development. I have a partner for the app. He does the development and I do the marketing for it. And we had like an amazing milestone. I guess this is where you grab the brass ring, I guess, after all these years of just trying to push for it and get people to know about it. We got reviewed on Poker News, Which, you know, I personally consider the best poker media site out there. And, they took our app and, you know, I couldn't have, I consider myself a pretty decent poker writer. And I created the app, and what a review they gave us. It was just completely positive. And, you know, it's not necessarily poker related, but I guess one lesson you can take from it, everyone out there, is if, you know, if you believe you can be a good player, if you believe in your game and you believe in yourself, you just keep on pushing and pushing and remain persistent and dedicated, you know, down the line, if you work hard enough, hopefully that success will come. And, you know, it was just such a great thing. How am I running? I'm feeling great. When I saw that review, it just completely made my day. I told my app partner right away, and it was just major celebration. And of course, we're really happy to have seen a nice spike in downloads and, you know, and some good reviews. So just a really great thing to see on Pokemon.
Yeah. Many congratulations. Thank you. We'll put a link to that review in our show notes, you know, for this episode too. So you can click on that and read the review, and anybody that hasn't looked into Poker Notes Live definitely should. I think it's a good asset to have when you're at the poker table and keeping records. I know our next segment will be talking about keeping records.
I see what you did there. Very good.
that's a pretty good vehicle for doing that. So.
Yep.
In fact, nothing is sure except death and taxes, and maybe we can help you out with the taxes part by consulting our special guest right after these messages. The heart and soul of poker has always been the fact that it's a social game.
Who doesn't remember sitting around the kitchen table with their buddies in high school, drinking soda, playing for nickels, dimes, and quarters?
Back before everyone had a computer in their pocket. Do you remember how difficult it used to be to keep track of organizing your home game?
Now, running a home game with your friends is easier than ever before, using the new one-of-a-kind OOAK iOS Poker app.
As a home game host, you'll love all the OOAK features that help you keep track of it all.
The one-of-a-kind app provides you with the number of chips of each denomination needed to create the desired starting stack, and it also keeps track of tournament blind levels.
Whether you are playing cash games or tournaments, this app will allow you to start your games effortlessly, cutting down on setup time and getting the action going as quickly as possible.
For more information, visit OOAK.poker and follow them on Twitter at OOAKpoker.
Be sure to download the one-of-a-kind poker app from the App Store today.
Seat open, table one. Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. Ugh, I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I'll look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses, and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live. Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
Floor, an in-depth look at poker rules situation.
Well, we're back, and we're certainly pleased to have a special guest today on the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, Ray Condler, a CPA that is located in Las Vegas and is kind of known for specializing and advising gamblers and poker players on their tax requirements and tax strategies to deal with winning and, I guess, losing. So, Ray, thanks very much for taking the time and joining us this time of year.
Yeah, pleasure having me.
This is a real treat. Did see a clip that was on Poker News, I guess, on YouTube that you did during the WSOP in 2014 and brought up some topics in that. But let's just start out with maybe a little background on you. How did you get into kind of specializing with poker and gambling winnings and advising people?
Well, we've had the practice in Vegas since 2000. I bought into the practice in 2007. Obviously, had a gaming presence already. We audit a lot of casinos, internal and audit work for a lot of casinos, and from there, offshoots were, you know, getting referrals from the casino and gamblers. You know, people winning big jackpots and, you know, similar, you know, tournaments and things like that. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, we expanded down to the World Series of Poker down to Rio. We got a booth down there, an accounting booth we put down there about 4 years ago. And the first year was it was a tremendous success. We were there for 6 weeks every day from 9 a.m. till midnight, and met a lot of players. And it was, you know, we have good association with the World Series of Poker. So when we originally signed on, it was kind of an interesting development because, you know, we're not selling, even if you've ever been down there at the World Series, you know, they're selling water and
right.
glasses and books and things. But we weren't selling it, you know, we were just selling the service. And, you know, it was kind of like, well, I think it'd be more educational to people, you know, obviously the purpose, obviously, to, you know, get new clients and things like that. But it really became educational. We had people stop by and, you know, we always... told people, you know, we never charge for calls or emails, or, you know, just stop by the booth and ask us questions. And that first year was just incredible. It was just players after players, you know, similar situations, you know, win a bracelet, you know, cash, you know, from winning $10,000, you know, seat to the World Series to, you know, winning a bracelet. What do I do with this W2G? and a lot of
right.
we found out that a lot of accountants don't have the knowledge that we had, and you know, it was kind of one of those things where we just took it and told people, hey, here's our experience, here's what we can do. And then after the first year, you know, we became more known, you know, the second year and third years after that, that, you know, the WSOP now actually sends us to their circuit events, and we have booths there.
Wow.
And we educate the players. So it's a pretty interesting niche. I mean, they're, you know, the poker community is, it's really interesting because a lot of people, you know, even big people that win bracelets don't file.
Wow.
We find people that, you know, haven't filed in years. So wow. It's one of those things we're trying to educate them. Hey, you know what? File your taxes. File them on time. You need to ever get a payment plan with the IRS. Just don't get on, you know, don't. Not file.
Yeah, don't.
Right.
Because, you know, especially the bigger names, they love to put your name on the paper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they love
that, hey, you know, he hasn't filed and we're going after him. So, you know, it was more the first year being very, very educational, and the world, the WSOP said the same thing, you know, like every year we thank them, you know, for being there, and they all say the same thing. No, thank you for being there because,
right.
you know, you're helping our community, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you play poker yourself? You have, like, I guess, some home game experience, or just straight,
I'm
you know?
I'm a learning player. you know, being a it's kind of interesting because, you know, being a CPA, it's like my wife goes, well, what do you do, you know, to relax? Well, I look at more numbers.
Yeah.
more
odds in your head. Yeah.
I've taken lessons with a lot of pros, and, you know, my game is expanding. I'll never get to that level. Some of, you know, the way those guys think are absolutely amazing to me. But I've had some good education the last couple of years. So I play locally. I do pretty well. I make a lot of final tables. I just don't win. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out how do I get to that next level. So hopefully, you know, I can get a little bit better. Maybe try to cash this year at the WSOP. But, you know, it is kind of interesting. It's an interesting question because we go to all these events, like even, you know, down to Rio or at the circuit events, we're playing with the guys, you know, so we know what they go through. You know, we know about pay jumps and, you know, chopping and all that kind of stuff. So kind of like, you know, they look at us like, wow, you know, he comes from us.
Right,
because, you know, it's kind of interesting. It didn't. The poker thing is it's an interesting niche, and you know, if you know how they're thinking, and you know, I'll never get to know that expertise how they're thinking when I got pocket aces against their 2-7, how they outbid me, you know, how they out get me out of the pot. But you know, my point is that if we're kind of one of them, so we know, you know, what they're going through, and when they ask questions, we know. And then I tell all my guys who are teaching me, just take it easy on me when you play against me, you know.
So, so are you a Las Vegas native then, born up there?
No, we're actually in New Jersey. Did the whole public accounting thing in New York City, lived in New Jersey. Still have a firm in New Jersey. I'm actually here today in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
It's more of a tax practice. And then Vegas is more of a poker tax audit office in Vegas, so I go back and forth.
Oh, where?
So New Jersey native. We had houses in New Jersey and Vegas, and actually sold the Jersey house last year. So now we're full-time Vegas people, which also helps our taxes. So
how many CPAs are you in the firm?
Well, we got New Jersey, we got 5 people, and in the Vegas office, we're now up to about, I think our personnel is like 15 people.
Well, that sounds like a good home game, a couple tables.
Excuse me?
That sounds like a good home game.
Yeah, that would be, but I have to play against my son and, you know, all the younger kids, and, you know, we do play a lot at the casino, especially my son and I and a couple of the other people on our staff. We do play at the locals. So
cool.
we're all kind of involved in the game.
Any home game you played growing up or in college or high school or anything?
No, really. Just started taking up once I got to Vegas. My father was a card player, blackjack player more than anything. But you know, always loved cards. And the more I got into Texas Hold'em, and even to this day, it's like the game is you learn something every day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I played last week and. I also went to the circuit events and played, and I saw stuff I never saw before.
Mm.
So it's, you know, all your listeners know the same thing. Every day you learn something else.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
That's very true.
So, you know, take notes and, you know, try to remember until I get in the situation again, and that's how you develop. It's just a great game.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, here at Top Pair, our audience, you know, we're not all bracelet winners. You know, we can't all be playing for, you know, the high roller kind of stakes.
Sure.
So just sort of wondering, I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there are probably wondering, you know, whether you're probably playing in a low stakes home game or, you know, 1-2, 2-4, 2-4, limit, that sort of stuff. You know, what sort of things should a low stakes home game player be keeping track of for tax purposes? You know, what can they do to keep out of trouble? You know, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, we get this question a lot, like, you know, especially people, cash for the first time or do play a lot of home games, like, when, you know, do I have to file?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And maybe, you know, and the question is, if you ever look on every IRS website or IRS documentation, it's always the same thing. You have to file if you have income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's kind of a sticky point because if you actually look at the IRS guidelines, you have to basically record your income each session. They talk about sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, the little lady who goes to the casino and plays there one day and wins $500,
mm-hmm.
you know, say she plays from 8 to 9 in the morning, that's a session. So the IRS wants you to account for every session. Now, do people do it? No. I mean, you can't have her, if she's there 300 days a year, she'd have to show all the gross and all the net.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at all their IRS guidelines, which is, you know, it's to me, it makes... How do you keep records like that?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, every U.S. citizen is obviously has to reporting, you know, their income that they earn for the year.
Right.
So, and that could be anything from, you know, that could be anything from a cash game at home,
mm-hmm.
You know, to a bracelet. So, any kind of income you have to report. Now, how?
And this is even if you're, it's like assuming you even have a good job and you just play once in a while, once every couple of weeks. You're saying that constitutes income, even though you're,
I mean,
in the
IRS mindset, sure, it's income.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, but, you know, are people reporting that? In most cases,
I'm guessing not.
Exactly. But if you're, and plus, you know, if it's a lot of cash involved,
right?
You know, it never gets deposited to the bank account. I'm sure people aren't telling me anything about that kind of stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, but as a CPA, my job is to say, hey, you know, you're supposed to pay tax on your income no matter where you earn it.
Well, mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, foreign or not. So, you know, the IRS is big on foreign bank, you know, foreign income now and bank accounts. But any gross income is supposed to be reported, and then especially gambling income, you could take your gambling losses against your winnings.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So you are a stand-up guy, and maybe you've won, you know, $50 in a home game 10 times during the year, so you've maybe got $500. And you stand up guy and report it. What things can you do to offset that?
There's two options of that. One is you can file as an amateur, and one you can file as a professional. And there's two different filing requirements for both. I mean, most people who play in the cash games will have other, you know, other types of incomes. This won't be their main profession,
mm-hmm.
so they would file as an amateur. And as an amateur, you will report on other income line on your 1040 your gross winnings. And then as an itemized deduction on Schedule A of your return, you would take all your gambling losses against the winnings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have this guy, he wins $5,000, he would show $5,000 in gross winnings, and then Schedule A, if he has the losses against it, he could take $5,000 in gross losses against the winnings. And those those losses can come from any type of gambling. They don't have to be. So if he wins $5,000 in poker, he doesn't have to have $5,000 in poker losses. He can have $5,000 in other gambling losses, like slots, blackjack, sports.
That's interesting.
Like that.
For a tournament player, it's easy to do that because you've got all your receipts, you know, whether you've won, whether you've lost. But at the tables, you know, if it's cash games or blackjack, like you say, it's not like, okay, every time you win or lose, you get
out. It's not recorded.
Right.
So, you know, we've set up with a lot of our players, we have logbooks that we set up to players that, and in my view, you know, anybody listening can email me and I could send them what it looks like. But the logbook will, you know, go, there'd be one for tournaments, one for sit and go tournaments, one for cash, one for tournament, and then another one for blackjack, slots, roulette, and those kinds of game where basically you would say, okay, on March 16th, I went to Bally's and I sat down with $50 in blackjack and I started with 50 and ended with zero. So for that day, it's a $50 loss.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be documentation of a loss that the IRS would accept.
So they trust. I mean, there's a lot of trust involved, basically.
There is. I mean, we went, you know, our players that are clients or they're really, you know, we educate them and you keep these perfect logbooks. It could be Excel spreadsheets. It could be whatever. It could be on their phone, keeping track and, you know, then note it back into a logbook later. But we've been, knock on wood, we've been to audits for clients. None of my clients have gotten audited. We've been on audits, referrals to, you know, to document, and we give them the IRS perfect logbooks, and they go, it's, you know, it's all great. See you later. So there is trust involved in terms of the IRS could make a point in audit, you know, looking for, okay, well, you went to that reward $50, you know, where'd you get it from? You know, did you take it out of the bank? Did you, you know, take an ATM withdrawal? Things like that. So they could look at that. We haven't found that to be the case. They're not that far into that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things you can offset, you know, other than losses? Again, say if you're hosting a game and you've bought cards or you've bought chips or your instance is a good instance. You know, you've started to play poker. I'm sure you're keeping track of your income and that, but you're paying for lessons or you're paying somebody to advise you.
Yeah, all that. Yeah.
Can you offset against the winnings too? Or?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the amateur. If you file as a professional, yes, no doubt.
Okay.
As an amateur, usually they just go by your losses.
Okay.
Okay. But if there's but if I would take it if I'm running a game, and I have expenses and I get winnings from that game, I would have no problem taking it as an expense.
Even if you're an amateur, then, huh?
Sure. Exactly. Because it's part of the making the money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I mean, I have to look more into that in terms of, you know, if there's any been cases on that, but that's where you go with the professional. The professional, as the alternative, can take all the losses like the amateur can. But on top of that, he can take all expenses associated with his quote business. There was a Mayo case a couple years ago where guy had say $100,000 in winnings and $100,000 in losses. He actually had a tried to summarize, 100,000 winnings, 130,000 in losses, and then he had 20,000 in other, which is like travel and meals and all that kind of stuff. The IRS disallowed basically all of it, and they came back in a ruling that said, okay, he is self-employed, he is a professional gambler. We'll allow the losses 100% against the winnings only.
Okay.
So if he had 130 losses and 100 in winnings, he can only show a net of zero. He can't show a net of negative 30.
Right.
However, we'll allow the other $20,000 as other deductions as a loss on his return.
Mm.
And other deductions include travel, meals, entertainment, home office, training, supplies, cell phone. So any like if you look at that as a business, any expenses associated with that can be written off on Schedule C when they file as a professional.
When would you get to that point, or when would you advise people to switch from amateur or professional, or
what? Well, you said you can change. You know, you can change every year. Because the downside of filing as a professional is it's a Schedule C, so you have to pay Social Security tax.
Oh, okay.
On any income,
earned income, rather
than. So the amateur, you know, say net the amateur makes $20,000. On his return, he'll pay regular tax on 20. The professional would show regular tax plus Social Security tax, which is another 15.3%.
Well, you say it's a downside. I will just point out, well, long term, you know, technically speaking, you know, once you turn retirement age, you're supposed to get some money back, assuming Social Security stays valid. But yeah, of course, I know what you mean. Another 15%
hit. How old are you?
34, sir. I've got a while.
It's not going to be there when you get there.
Exactly. That's why we'd be looking for deductions.
I'm 61.
I'm 58. I don't think it's going to be there when I need it. But the point is, but if you're self-employed, at the other side of that, okay, you could set up pension plans. You could set up
okay.
You could set up a SEP or a SEP IRA and things like that. And also, we've been starting to incorporate even the bigger guys with bigger income, who could put significant amounts of money away in pension plans. So there is a higher side to the professional than the amateur. The pro gives you much more expenses that are deductible, whereas the amateur is basically just the winnings and losses, the losses against the winnings.
So it's just a case by case basis. You don't have kind of
right.
if your income is $5,000 or less, stay amateur, or $5,000, but more than $5,000, go to professional. It just depends on your situation,
Right, because the IRS could argue, well, if you only made $5,000, but that's all you did throughout the whole year, then aren't you self-employed?
Right.
Then you're really not an amateur.
Right.
So it's really not. It's really a case by case. And that's why, we sit with our clients and ask them, the questions, how many hours did you play, how many hours did you study, all the things associated with the game that we can figure out if you would. Most players that come to us, we automatically think they're amateurs, but then as we get more into it, they're actually professional.
Well,
I have a couple guys that, we've argued, guys making a couple hundred thousand as, W-2 employees. But spend no time, they just get that as a figurehead. But then they're playing poker full time, even though they have a big salary, they're still, most of their time is poker. So they're calling them professionals.
Right.
And there's some recent cases on it. So the landscape is changing. IRS is starting to get more into looking at poker related returns. So it's a challenging future to see what they're going to do and how far they'll go into these audits.
So you're saying you've got offices in New Jersey and in Nevada. My question is there, depending on where, obviously the IRS is national for the United States, of course, but depending on where a person lives, would a tax liability be greater based on, if they live in Hawaii?
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. I mean, if you live in California, if you live in any state that has state income tax, if you're showing a profit, you have to pay state tax on that.
So Nevada is the way to go, you're saying, because there's no state tax.
Well, I mean, people stop by the booth, hey, just want a bracelet. I go, well, didn't you buy the condo in, Nevada last week? Because, you got to look at, California's 9-10%.
Wow.
Some of the other taxes are huge. And there are also some states, Massachusetts and a few other ones, that don't allow gambling losses to be deducted against gambling winnings.
Wow.
Right.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so basically, people in Massachusetts, we have to really find out if we can classify them as amateurs, start to classify as professionals, because then the losses will be deductible on Schedule C.
Right.
So
There
is a strategy involved in the state returns, yes, because no matter if any of your players make money in that state,
right.
And the state has an income tax, the state will tax it.
Well, let's just take an example then. You've got your booth there at the WSOP, and all of a sudden, a middle-aged lady comes up and she's all flushed and got sweat on her brow, and she just hit a four-figure or maybe even a five-figure win in a tournament or a jackpot, and she says, "What do I do?" I mean, what? An amateur, obviously, somebody that just got lucky and happened to get into that five or four or five figure money. What do they do? What do you tell them immediately?
Well, you start getting log books together of your losses.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and recreate it if you can, and get information from your casino on what your slot play is to offset it.
Okay.
So it's all documentation. If the IRS, has sufficient documentation. I never want to go to an audit. Audits are not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the auditor, it can be worse than some people have had. But if you have proper documentation and you don't, you don't play games with them, it's really not that a big deal. I have players come to me and say, I had 19 W2Gs for $382,000 and I lost everything.
Mm.
You know what? That return is probably will get audited.
Hmm.
So it's like, show something, get as much as, our job is to make sure, you pay the least amount of tax legally. Put together log books. If you pay them something, you pay them something. But, try to get it down as much as possible.
Yeah.
But you definitely don't want to get audited. You want to file returns when you get income, and you want to have proper documentation. And you can always, all these log books and stuff that I talk about can be recreated. You don't have to do them on the spot.
Yeah.
But they can always, they can always go back and be recreated.
Right.
But I find out that a lot of the players don't keep records during the year, what they spend. Even players who back other players.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Good point.
They don't keep track of who they
whole different strata. Yeah.
Right. Because if you're buying into this guy and this guy, keep track of it because that is a deduction. He lost for you. Well, that's part of being in the game.
Well, yeah, that's actually an interesting thing. That happens a lot in home games. Let's say, for example, you've got 10 guys, and then one of them will go as the group representative. Each
sure.
one will have 10%. So, the fact is, Joe Bloggs, who won the bracelet, is the only one recorded as making all this income, when, in fact,
sure.
he only made 10%. How does that work?
Right. So what he'll do is he'll file the return, obviously, and then we'll 1099 out to all the players that have a piece of him. What his piece is. So when his return, he'll show the gross income and then show the net out to the backers.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow, and the backers then, when they get his 1099, we'll have to talk to their account, hopefully
right.
after this conversation will be us, and say, what do I do with this? So then it goes back to the same thing. Are you a pro or are you an amateur?
Right.
So it kind of opens up a whole new thing there. But you have to get off that person's social security number.
Yeah, I've always wondered that, and I've been involved in a couple of them, and I'm not a real tournament player, so I don't, and a couple of them I've been involved in, but there's a lot of trust there. Say if you,
it's amazing.
You've gone in and somebody's going to win, and say if they do, get extremely lucky, win a bracelet, maybe a six-figure prize, and they're looking to you saying, okay, you got to pay your share of the taxes. If you don't pay them, does that eventually go back to the guy that won or not? No.
Once you 1099 the income out, it's no longer part of your return anymore.
Yeah, that was one of the big questions we had. Is okay, should be spreading this around and everybody paying their fair share of taxes. But if Frank just wants to grab his money and say screw you when it comes time to pay the taxes, do I have to shoulder that
right.
since it's my neck was on the chopping block originally there?
Yeah, I mean, once you get off of his return at one, then whoever gets the income, that's up to them. It's not back to him.
Right. I only have one more. Go ahead.
So it has to do with foreigners, too, because if we have people from foreign countries, then...
Right, of course.
It gets into withholding tax, and, one of the things even we did the booth was that we really didn't anticipate was the amount of business we would get from people from non-U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they win at the booth, or once they win a bracelet, whenever, anything over 5,000, if there's no treaty between the U.S. and that country, the IRS takes out 30% right at the spot.
Yep.
And they have to file to get it back.
Hmm.
But if you have backers and one of them's foreigner, then you have to withhold the 30% remitted. So it's kind of complicated, but we can handle all that.
And that brings me to a real point of mine. I mean, I've got this. And maybe I should be going under a false name here, but I've got this libertarian streak in me that, if I win a $10,000 tournament and the casino comes up and says, well, we're not going to pay you, we're only going to pay you this portion, and, you know, here's the documentation in that. I mean, there really is part of me that says, the hell with you. I won the whole thing. Pay me the whole thing. I'm a citizen, and I'm an honest citizen. I will pay my tax liability when it comes due. I don't need to be babysit by an institution.
Well, they are not required to take anything out.
Really? Because from the stories I've heard, they really strong arm you. It's like, okay, you know, you're not getting it all because we're going to hold it back because we don't trust you enough to not wet yourself at the table and also not pay your tax.
No, but that's not their responsibility to govern you.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
You won the money. No, I would argue that to the president of the casino before you get paid, that as a U.S. citizen, there is no requirement to withhold a dollar.
Okay. That's
And I will tell you of every W-2G I've seen this year, which are thousands, I think I saw one with the withholding. And we got all of it back because she had losses against it.
Yeah.
Right. Excellent.
So I mean the only requirement for them to withhold money is if you don't have a US Social Security or passport.
Oh, okay.
Right. Cool. I only have actually one more question, and at the moment it's theoretical, but I hope it becomes a very actual question. When the time comes that I win a bracelet, right, mm-hmm. is the bracelet itself taxable?
It's part of the income. It is income to you. I've never seen it, though, ever given out a 1099 for it.
Interesting. Right. Yeah, because those things can be pretty valuable.
You just wear it at some point. It's not actual money, you know.
Yeah, but it's got gold and diamonds and everything on it,
in the IRS's mind, that would be considered some type of income.
Wow, that's a good
interesting.
Question. Never even thought.
Thank
that.
You got
something for winning. I mean, it has a value. I don't know how you would go. You know, you have to go get it appraised and things like that. But I've never seen that been in the 1099.
Uh huh.
So
well, when I win my
IRS
bracelet,
even.
Maybe I'll ask you about the actual value. Right?
Again, this has been a hot topic on a lot of the fronts on different things as far as online poker and gambling and everything.
Well, fantasy sports, the same thing. We got these questions that all correspond with fantasy sports. Is it taxable? How do I report it? You know, and it's still income.
Well, my question is does it make a difference if it is considered a game of skill rather than a game of chance? If I've won it at slots as opposed to winning it at poker or fantasy game where there's skill involved,
IRS will still look at it as income.
There's no different light they look at it.
Right, the IRS will look at it as income, but our Congress will say what's game, what's poker, and what's skill and what's a game. It makes no sense. The IRS sees it as income.
So long as it's green, it's money.
You're supposed to report it.
There you go.
Well, that's interesting. So are you still going to renew and be at the WSOP again this year for all of our listeners that might be down there?
Yeah, we'll be there every year. We're actually going to probably do – we're thinking of doing a class down there.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we've been on a couple other radio shows. I'm in the process of writing a book on the on the taxation issues. So, we'll definitely be there for the 6 weeks. I'll probably play in a couple events and try to see if my skill advanced a little bit, but after the last couple of days I'm not sure if it has or it's gone downhill. we enjoy being there and just to meet the people and to give them some advice. And this is my point. And if they take the information we give them and share with their other accounts, I'm okay with that. We'll have people come to me and say, hey, I love my tax guy, but he knows nothing about poker, but I want him to do the return. So we'll actually prepare the Schedule C for the client, and then he takes that and gives that to his accountant. So we've done that and helped, in that regard, too.
Really cool.
This is great. We really appreciate you, taking the time. We know it's busy time of year, and to carve out a few minutes for our listeners, I think this is a topic that
no problem.
It was
a pleasure. We don't, we never, as I say, our website is PokerCPA.com. They can easily find me there.
One more time? I didn't hear it. Say it again.
PokerCPA.com.
Okay, great.
The name of the firm is Condler, K-O-N-D-L-E-R, Condler & Associates. Phone number in Vegas is 702-433-7075. Never charge for calls, consultations, or emails. So if any, you know, anybody listening wants to, you know, call me, I'm Ray Condler, the owner of the firm. I would gladly give them some advice or help as much as we can.
Okay, well, definitely we'll put that on our show notes on the homepage so people could click on that and find you. And I'm anticipating this is an interesting enough topic. We may get some feedback from some folks in that, and maybe after the tax deadline's over with and things settle down, we might even have you back in a couple of months to kind of do a follow-up.
I'd be glad to. Anybody, yeah, any way I can help or help your listeners, please don't hesitate to ask.
Wow.
Cool, and you're on Twitter as well, right, Ray?
My son and them do all that Twitter stuff. Yeah, we're definitely on Twitter. Yes.
Okay.
You're sounding like me. So.
It's a very big vehicle for fun. I'm getting more into it. The younger kids, I'm 58, but you know the younger guys, they just say the Twitter and the whole thing. So we're definitely on that. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
All right.
And we actually have on pokernews.com. We have a they gave us a tab for poker taxes.
Great.
So we're also
that's
on
wonderful.
There too.
Okay.
Well, it's a great service. A lot of people can use it. That's for sure.
Great. Well, I think it's pretty educational for a lot. And any way I can help anybody, you know, please feel free to ask.
Well, that's super. Again, thanks for being with us.
Okay. Great.
Great speaking with you. Well, after these messages from our sponsors, we'll hear a little bit about an incident of clairvoyance at the table.
The heart and soul of poker has always been the fact that it's a social game.
Who doesn't remember sitting around the kitchen table with their buddies in high school, drinking soda, playing for nickels, dimes, and quarters?
Back before everyone had a computer in their pocket. Do you remember how difficult it used to be to keep track of organizing your home game?
Now, running a home game with your friends is easier than ever before, using the new one-of-a-kind OOAK iOS poker app.
As a home game host, you'll love all the OOAK features that help you keep track of it all.
The one-of-a-kind app provides you with the number of chips of each denomination needed to create the desired starting stack, and it also keeps track of tournament blind levels.
Whether you are playing cash games or tournaments, this app will allow you to start your games effortlessly, cutting down on setup time and getting the action going as quickly as possible.
For more information, visit OOAK.poker and follow them on Twitter at OOAKpoker.
Be sure to download the one-of-a-kind poker app from the App Store today.
One outer. A humorous, peculiar, significant, or noteworthy story from the past poker home game.
Well, you know, Bruce, not all of our one-outers are always necessarily laugh-out-loud, hilarious happenings at the poker table. But I have to tell you, something happened recently a few games ago in my dad's game, which was just, I guess, a one-outer in the essence of clairvoyance.
One of those things that make you go,
It was just unbelievable. I mean, some of our listeners here at Top Pair may be familiar with, seeing those infamous clips of Daniel Negreanu calling the card. Like, he knew exactly what card was going to come off the deck. So you think he's got some of these magical, mystical powers, and perhaps it happens once in a while. Well, you know, you'll say, oh, come on, give me a two, and a two will come. Or, you know, if you're really, really good, somehow you'll call the exact card. You know, it's like catching lightning in a bottle, one out of 52 chance sort of thing. Now, what happened at this game, it was just incredible. Because basically, and, you know, we got a player, we'll call him Morris, because that's his name. And, he always says, when we're playing, let's say, a seven-card stud game, he'll be like, you know, give me the queen of whatever, right? And he never gets it right, right? So this one, he goes, give me ace of spades. Lo and behold, ace of spades comes. Wow, everyone goes, well, you got this card that was unbelievable, right? So of course,
even a broken clock's right twice a day.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So this was Third Street, you know, his first card up and everything, and so he bets, and we all just sort of, you know, stay in to see the next card. He goes, I need the two of spades, right? And boom, he got the two of spades. We're all going bananas at this point, right? A couple of us fold because it's like a high-low seven-card stud game, and he's got, you know, an ace of spades, two of spades. It's already looking good. One of us or two of us is left at the table, right? Gets to Fifth Street, and he goes, I need the three of spades! And he got the three of spades. If there was one person or two people left in the hand besides him, I don't remember, but we pretty much insta-folded before he even had a chance to bet.
Sounds like somebody could look at that deck or should look at that deck under the black light.
We call this a one-outer, but it was like 3 one-outers in a row. Don't know how he did it.
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Robbie and Bruce will be happy to have you join them for our next show. Just a reminder, we love your input. Contact us via email at feedback@toppair.net. Give us a follow on Twitter at Top Pair and like our Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast Facebook page. After all, we're not always right, just 99% of the time. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to information mentioned in the show, log on to our website at toppair.net.